Welcome back to the Clear Voice podcast. This week I spoke to Maria Franzoni. Maria started her career in management consultancy, and it was here that she developed her senior level negotiation skills. But everything changed when she answered a cryptic job advert and started to work for a speaker bureau. She now runs her own speaker bureau called Maria Franzoni Limited, with over 4,000 speakers on her books. And these include Arnold Schwarzenegger, Elle Macpherson, and Malala. 2 years ago, she set up the Speaking Business Academy, where she trains speakers to take their speaking to the next level. And she also hosts the excellent Speaking Business podcast. In this podcast, we discussed why more men than women are on the speaker circuit, and they really are by a huge, huge proportion more men than women, the misogyny that Maria faced in her early career and how she dealt with it, and also how to generally speak with impact. So, let's get into it. Welcome, Maria. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming. I have to say, you look beautifully glamorous with your pink shirt and the green plant behind you. It's a very pleasing setup.
You need to go to Specsavers or any other optician open on the high street and get your eyes tested. But thank you so much.
So, Maria, please tell me a little bit about yourself and what you do.
So, me, I'm originally Italian, as you probably know from my name, Maria Luisa Antonella Franzoni, actually. And what do? I have two businesses. I wear two hats. One is a speaker bureau. And if you aren't in the industry, you probably won't know what a speaker bureau is. But it's a resource for organisations looking for experts to come in and speak at internal or external events. And then the other side is actually working with speakers. So I have a training company where I'm helping speakers to, I suppose, use their voice in a way, but, you know, develop their content, develop their assets, their profiles, and be ready for, you know, sophisticated audiences that we work with.
Wow. And so when you say speakers, what kind of level are we talking?
So really, we our clients are businesses, corporates, government, and they're quite sophisticated. They're leaders. So the speakers need to be at that level. They need to be a certain level that is stretching that audience. So it's not people coming out, you know, beginners. So it's people who've got maybe a new view or a new take on an interesting topic, people who can help businesses. Obviously, at the moment, the issues are very different to what they were before. Before we went into a pandemic, so they need to be relevant. So it's speakers of a certain standard that can talk to leaders and their teams and help them with, you know, achieve results.
Yeah, and how have you found it changing business and pivoting during the pandemic?
So what we did, because events became less because people weren't able to get together, there were two things that happened. One, many events went virtual. And so we were helping and supporting clients to do that. But also we found that many speakers needed some help and support and guidance as to, hang on, how am I relevant now? What's going on? How do I need to change? So we split the business in two. Half the business continued working with the corporate clients and businesses, providing them with experts. And the other half, which is the half which I've been involved with more myself, has been working with speakers and helping them to look at their content and be ready, because businesses are going to need a lot of help and support.
Absolutely, absolutely. And did you find the speakers that you have who do deliver really well on stage and in person, did they come across different challenges once the events were moved online?
It's really fascinating, because people who are brilliant on stage, you would expect would also be brilliant on camera. Some were and some weren't. And then the other came true, that people who were not so confident on stage absolutely shone on camera. So it's been a really interesting experience. But not only that, not only the actual getting the voice across and getting the message across, but also the whole tech issue. Because as you know, I mean, we're looking at each other on video, people will be listening on a podcast, but you've got the issue of good sound, good video, good lighting, and also not looking like you're peering over a wall when you're actually on camera, but being comfortable looking into the camera, looking in the right direction. So all of those things, it's fascinating.
And so do you think that the people who have gained this confidence now online will be able to bring it back into the real world when we sort of resume some normality?
The real world now. a normality, right? So I think we're not going to have what we had before. Mm. I think there's still going to be a lot of virtual going on. And I think many people will actually have so much enjoyed the fact that they don't have to travel.
Yeah.
They can deliver great value. I think many people will continue to do a lot more virtual, and I think many companies will continue to do it. Others are chomping at the bit to get back on stage. So it varies from person to person. There are some people who, as speakers, they get their energy from the audience. And when you're in a virtual environment, it's harder to get that energy and get that response. And they'll always be live. I mean, we want to go and see live concerts. We want to see live theatre. We want to see the person live speaking. It'll always come back. But I think it's going to be a little while yet before we go back to any semblance of normal. And I think that normal will be different.
Mm, definitely. And it's so interesting what you say about taking energy from the audience. And a lot of people say to me, now they're doing their work presentations on Teams or on Zoom, and they can't judge how people are feeling about it or if it's going down well. Are there any things that you could, tips that you could give to just help them with that?
Well, that's interesting, because I've actually had opposite feedback from some speakers who say they love the fact that in the virtual world, if there's a chat box, for example, they can see that people are chatting. I mean, that's difficult to do. I would have somebody else keeping an eye on that, because I think that's very hard. I personally can't multitask. But some of the speakers are saying they love the fact that they're getting responses like thumbs up or yes, or I agree with that. Obviously, they have to encourage that.
That's really interesting,
So they're liking that. Mm. Yeah, you have to encourage that kind of response. And there are activities where you can engage. And also, if you are doing it properly, it's actually harder to hide online than it is in a big group in an audience.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so interesting what you say about the reactions, because a lot of people say, I say at the beginning, please ask me questions if you want to. But I think it's hard enough to speak in a Zoom call anyway when there's lots of people, especially if the precedent has been set that one person is giving the presentation. There might be 20, 50, 100 other people. You don't want to be that person that says, oh, excuse me, I actually have a question. So having that ability to use the chat box, I think people are overlooking that so much.
It's absolutely true. And also the fact that you can pick through the questions and choose the most challenging ones as well, because sometimes you get a lot of questions and many will be the same. The other thing you've got, of course, with having people asking the question, having to type it, many times at an event, you'll have somebody who's asking a question and really they're making a speech before they ask the question.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen virtually.
Yeah.
And that makes a big difference.
Of course, yes. So I really remember those. Amazing. And so tell me a little bit more about the Speaker Bureau and how you got into that.
Like most people who fall into something that they love, it's by accident, completely by accident. So I had been a management consultant previously, and before that I had been in retail management. And I wanted to do something different, but I wanted to use my experience. And there was a cryptic advert that said, if you're able to negotiate at senior level, which of course I had been doing as a management consultant, I'd been telling people very senior, much older than me, what was wrong with their businesses. And so I felt, you know that courage you have in youth and ignorance. So I felt very courageous. I had a strong voice at that time. And so I responded to this advert because I thought, yes, I want to be able to, negotiate at senior level. Had no idea that such a thing as a Speaker Bureau existed. No idea at all. Met the owner, talked about what it was about, and I thought, actually, I really like the sound of this. And I've been addicted ever since. 23 years on, I'm still here.
Wow, amazing. Amazing. And so for you, how do you find, is there a difference between female speakers and male speakers?
Yes, absolutely. There are not nearly as many female speakers on the circuit. We call it a circuit. If somebody's available to be booked, we say they're on the circuit. They're not really on the circuit as such, but we know that they will speak and they will speak to corporate audiences, because not everybody will. And there aren't as many women, although there are just as many women in the world. Mm. And there are just as many women who are amateur speakers, if you like, as opposed to professional speakers. On the stages, it's not balanced. But that goes for everything. That goes for diversity on all levels.
And what do you think falls? Because I think it's the same as you've raised a really important point, that in so many industries, like the creative industries and advertising, in law, there are so many women, sometimes even a majority, at the more junior levels. And then when it goes to senior levels, it flips. So why do you think that is?
Oh, do you know what? I think it's such a big, complex topic, and I don't know if anybody's done a huge study on it. I do think the fact that our roles in life are very different, and that it is a woman's role still to be the main carer if there are children. And I know I've got some top female speakers that if one of the children is ill, they don't want to leave that child with anybody else. And I don't blame them. They want to be home. And of course, so if that person then says, I can't do the event even though I'm scheduled to do it because my child is ill, you allow that once. And then if it happens a second time, you then stop putting that person forward because you think, can I rely? Because at the moment, their child is going through a phase where they're being ill quite regularly. And it is a real thing. And it's a lot easier for men to say, well, that's okay, my wife or my partner will take care of the child and I'll go. And I know that's a real general statement, but it does happen. I also think that a lot of women are drawn to topics that are much more, much softer. And many businesses are more interested in dealing with the harder topics. It's changing. It's changing, but they're more interested in the business result topics. And women are often sort of better at the softer skills and the softer topics. And that's, again, a huge generalisation, but it does tend to be the case.
Yeah, yeah. It is interesting. And then, so in terms of changing that, there's no quick fix. And I think it's going to take generations, really, for that to even out.
Yeah, I mean, it's taken generations for us to get to where we are now. So, and it's incredible. We're so lucky. I mean, I'm the first female in all of my history that has, you know, bought her own house at the age of 21, that had higher education, that has had her own business, run her own business. And, you know, that's a long way down the line to be saying that. You know, it's, you know, where are we, you know, in 2020? And yet it's taken that long for a woman to do that in my family. So we're still way behind, but we're way behind in so many areas. It's not just for women. It's just in all. I don't want to use the word equality because we're not equal. I think parity or, you know, fairness, in fairness, I suppose.
And you're, as you say, like, you had a very strong voice when you're working in the corporate world. What has your relationship been like with your voice?
Well, it's interesting because it's whether, I mean, obviously you're talking about voice and having the confidence and the strength to sort of share how you feel and your messaging. And then there's the actual voice itself. And when I was younger, every winter, I lost my voice.
Really?
Yeah. If it was a cold or whatever, every year for years, I lost my voice like clockwork. And I still haven't really put my finger on what it was, but I think it was partly to do with the fact that I was just exhausted at the end of every year. And I think you're exhausted when you're not really doing what you should be doing, when you're not in the right place. I haven't had that problem in the last 23 years in the space that I've been in now. And I think I hadn't found where I needed to be. And in terms of my voice, I suppose, the older I've got, the more confident I've got about who I am and what's important to me, and also the more confident I've got about expressing my opinions and not worrying about what anybody thinks. Whereas when you're younger, you're always worried about being judged and what does somebody else think. So I suppose my voice, I am actually quieter than I used to be, but I think my messages are stronger, if you know what I mean.
I found
my voice, I found my confidence.
That's so interesting. Yeah, I often think that the people who are loudest and shouting the loudest sometimes are the least confident. And actually, power and strength doesn't come with volume. It comes with being quieter and using your voice and knowing in that security that I know my worth and I know my my power and my authority, and I will share that when I want. And that's really, it is so powerful in that. And do you think that running your own business and doing the right thing for you has been part of that growth?
Yes, absolutely. It's been, yes, and it's been hard. It's not easy running your own business, having a team of people. It's been really hard. And I think if you always do the right thing, even when no one's looking, you can sleep at night.
Absolutely.
And that's been a very good lesson for me, yeah.
That is a very good lesson, yes. And was there a time where you really felt that you didn't have a voice?
I think when I was starting out in business, I had a couple of occasions where, and it was to do with being female, I think, rather more than anything else, although I try not to think that I've been treated any differently. But when you're young and you're a woman and you're blonde, you are considered to be not very bright. And I've always considered myself to be quite bright. and on more than one occasion, I was sort of stopped in my tracks that, you know, that's as far as you're allowed to go because you are female.
And was that in terms of career progression or?
That was career progression. I challenged, I was at, I'm not going to name names of the organisation, but I was with a very big organisation and we'd gone to a conference and the board members were all sitting on stage and there was something like 11 people and not one woman. So I raised my hand and said, how do I get a chair up there? And I was tapped on the shoulder and removed from the room because it wasn't an appropriate question to ask. And there I felt I don't have a voice here. And actually, I instead of staying there and fighting it, because I wasn't strong there, I didn't have a strong voice, I didn't feel confident, I left, I took myself out of it and took myself into a different career and a different path. But then that happened again there where somebody said, they literally patted me on the head and said, well done, young lady. And I think I must have been, you know, how old was I then? I must have been mid-20s. So yes, I was young. But to pat me on the head and say, well done, young lady. And I thought, well, do you say that to my male colleagues? You pat them on the head and say, well done, young man. And I thought, no, you're treating me differently because I'm female. So that was difficult. And when it's your own business, actually, it's different because you are the voice of your business. So I suppose maybe that's why I did it. I don't know. I did get irritated with that.
Yeah. And I think that's amazing because that's such a stark representation of what happens, whether it's you being removed from the room, you know, you as in a woman being removed from the room or the room being removed from you. I think quite often something, you know, conversations go into different rooms and people take all their useful conversations and decision making away from spaces where women are. Gosh, that is really quite an experience to have had.
It's a long time ago. I thought I'd let it go. So clearly I haven't. It's a long time ago. And it's interesting because I've always looked older anyway, but I was desperate to be older so that I would be taken seriously, which is horrible, really, to want to be older, to be taken seriously. Now that I am older, a lot older, I think, I wish I was young again. So it's funny, you always want what you haven't got. But yeah, I wanted as a woman to be older so that I would be taken it's on the same level actually as my colleagues.
Yeah, that's the only, just all you want is as you say, parity, just that equal opportunity to and playing field. And interestingly for you, that you inside yourself you said, no, this is not right for me and I'm going to be strong and take that decision to leave. Do you think that you had other colleagues that didn't and just stayed where they were and had different experiences?
Yes, because not everybody's ambitious, of course. Mm. Not everybody wanted the chair on that stage. Many women wanted to have a different, you know, not everybody, and in fact, men and women, not everybody is ambitious. I was incredibly ambitious at that age, and I didn't want anything to stand in my way. And I didn't want to have a fight either. I wanted it to be easy. I wanted people to recognise my ability. What's interesting, though, in that same organisation, my direct boss previously, but I actually changed, but previously had probably been the best developer, the best mentor, the best manager I could ever have had. And we've remained friends because what he used to do, he could see that I could stretch myself. He could see where I could go to next. And he was constantly stretching me. And in fact, the best managers I've had have been those that have sort of challenged me and pushed me and stretched me and seen beyond what I thought I could achieve.
Yeah, that's absolutely. Rather than people who are worried about you biting at their heels and thinking, I'm going to have to keep that person down.
Mm.
Yeah. Interesting. And then so flipping it, how was there a time where you really felt that I have a voice here and I've made a difference?
It's quite recent, actually. It's really quite recent. I suppose it happens at different times in life, but it's quite good to have happened now because we've been going through quite a difficult time. I didn't realise how much I knew that other people didn't know about the industry that we're in. And I didn't realise how much it would benefit them to share it. And it was just over 2 years ago that I started to work more with speakers and helping them and training them and teaching them with one of my team who's a specialist in training and development. And I was encouraged by a speaker to do so. And I had no idea that I had so much knowledge, and you just take it for granted. Mm. But because I'm an ex-management consultant, when I run my business, every year I'm looking to improve it. We've never had the same year twice, which for my team to start off with was very difficult because I'm constantly changing and improving. And for them, it's like, oh my goodness, more change. But they, you know, if something doesn't change, they get worried. So they're used to that continual change and development. And so in doing that, you learn an awful lot about the business, what works and what doesn't work. So, yes, I feel a bit empowered at the moment. I feel that actually I can help, I can do something. And what's wonderful is if I help a speaker, I'm actually helping them to improve their life and the life of their family. If I'm helping a business by putting a speaker in, they might do something, they might not. And I'm sure that some people will take something away, but I never really hear about it. But if I help a speaker, they'll tell me about their journey, they'll keep me informed and keep me in touch. And that's so rewarding. So I'm really excited about that.
Amazing. I empathise with that so much. When I was singing, I thought, you know, people, I mean, they obviously enjoy it. No one's throwing anything at me. I hope it touched them. Some of them are crying. I hope it's good tears. And then running my own business with Clear Voices, like seeing people making that change and having that instant gratification, it is so much more rewarding. And do you find that there are different challenges presented to you between men and women and learning and different messages that they have?
I don't think it's gender-based, really. I don't think so. I haven't done an analysis to say it's different in that way. I don't think so, no. I think it's very much a personality thing.
Interesting. And are there different personalities that are easier and harder to work with?
Yeah, and in the world, not only with speakers, you know, there are some people who think they know everything. And some people who will not accept any form of feedback. Mm. And I mean, I've been in that place before where I think, oh, I know everything, when I was a lot younger and I wouldn't accept feedback. And then the older you get, the more you realise that you know nothing and you've got to keep learning. So there are people who are, you know, who don't want to hear and want to see the world the way they see the world and don't want to see it in any other way. And I don't think that's a gender thing. I think that's just an individual thing.
And in terms of speaking and presenting well, what are the key things to remember? A lot of people get very worried about saying That's the main thing that I have. People, you know, I want to be able to not say in any of my presentations ever. So for you,
goodness.
What are the things?
Now I'm worried about saying, I didn't even think about that. Now, you know, like you say, don't think of a pink elephant. Now you're thinking of a pink elephant. Now I'm thinking of So for me, what's really important, and everybody, you know, people said it before, but be you. Don't be a cookie cutter version of somebody else. Don't try and present in somebody else's style. You've got your own personality. Just be you all of the time. So important. You know, I've done it. You see, I've done the now.
It's such an important, normal part of conversation. It's fine.
It's better than other things people say.
Yes, God.
So I think it's really important to find you and be you 100% rather than trying to be somebody else. I also think you shouldn't learn a speech off by heart. I think, sort of reciting a speech word for word doesn't really work. It's very difficult to do unless you're an excellent actor. And then, of course, you're acting a part. Mm. I think it's important to have good structure so that people can follow you. Know what you want to do, where you want to go to take the people on the journey with you in your speech, but don't learn it word for word. And be you, have your stories. Don't tell other people's stories, tell your own stories.
Absolutely. Oh, it's also, I think you're so right about being yourself and doing your own thing and telling your own stories, because it makes it less complicated and it makes, you're not trying to be anything else and adding facade, or it's just it's just you. And actually, for some people, I think that is terrifying, actually.
Probably, yes. I think, I've always been me, always, in work and outside work. So I was fascinated to learn that some people have a different personality when they walk into work to when they're at home. Mm. I've never done that. And I thought it was normal for everybody to be exactly the same person at home as you are at work. And I didn't realise that people were different.
Yeah.
I suppose I should have been alert to it because my father had a different personality at home than he did at work. And people would say, you know, would describe him at work. And, we as a family would say, well, that doesn't sound like him. He's not like that at home. And they should have alerted me to that, that that actually exists. And he used to do that. And I've never done it. And I think it's really important to, if you are you all of the time, it's quite easy to come off stage and go on stage. You're just carrying on being you.
Mm, absolutely. Absolutely. And in terms of the speakers in your bureau, do you find that you have a complete spectrum of speakers that are speaking about futurism and people who are speaking about women's rights or men's rights? Do you have a complete diversity, or do you really think about, okay, what, how am I going to shape the world with the speakers I have?
Oh, that's lovely. How am I going to shape the world? That's wonderful. We don't actually work that way in terms of shaping the world, although maybe we should. We respond to what clients need. So we're responding to demand. We're led by demand. However, sometimes you're having to anticipate what that demand might be. So the speakers and the topics are very much led by what's going on out in the world, what's needed, what is required. And so that's how it works, really. So there is diversity, but it's diversity related to our end clients. So there won't be topics about, for example, I don't know if somebody's an expert in embroidery or the history of embroidery.
Yeah.
That won't be a topic for us because it's not about it's not relevant to the end clients. But that may well be a topic that's interesting to people who are interested in that area. Are you with me?
Yeah, absolutely.
So there is a huge range, but it's all related to business, government. And yes, you're right. There's a lot of people speaking on future, on economics, on strategy, on anything related to people, because obviously people make up the majority of any organisation. Even when AI comes in, we will still need people skills.
Mm.
So it's business related, really.
And normally I ask how are you using your voice for change? And I would love to ask you that. But before, I'd like to ask, how do you see people using their voices for change?
Well, it's wonderful, actually. It's wonderful to see people. I mean, I refer to them as speakers, but actually they're all experts in different areas. And they might be, as we said, academics, economists, whatever. I love it when somebody is consistent and their message is consistent with what they are doing off stage. That's really wonderful to see. So if somebody's talking about, you know, sustainable leadership and sustainable business, that they actually live that off and that their business lives that too. So that's really wonderful to see that. And you are then motivated and inspired to be like those people. So those messages are really important, and you can affect that absolutely by encouraging clients to look at those topics and look at those speakers.
And then how are you using your voice for change?
Well, I suppose, as I said, by helping speakers, for sure, and having an impact on them and assisting them, but also with the clients by giving them, maybe having them think a bit outside the box. So when they come to us with a specific topic, maybe have them think differently and look outside rather than being sort of, you know, blinkered in their industry, but say, let's look outside, let's look at what's going on in the rest of the world, let's have a look at what's going on in other countries, in other areas, and see how we can improve by understanding what's going on elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So I suppose I'm using other people's voices on stages and on virtual platforms to help businesses and change in that way. And I used to say, actually, improving your business one speech at a time, but I suppose it's a bit different now because there's not so many speeches,
yeah.
But one intervention at a time, I suppose. But yeah, so we're doing it by putting experts in to help solve problems.
And do you find that people are set, you say that, you know, they look, they're quite blinkered, do you find they're set on a specific speaker that might not actually be the best speaker for their message? And then how do you handle that conversation?
That happens actually quite a lot. And it happens because somebody might be a fan of a speaker. They might have read lots of the books and they love the content. And they, as the leader, want to have that speaker come in and talk about maybe something that they've read about. But what they're doing there is they're not necessarily thinking about what the business needs. They're thinking about what they need. And so you have to have some really in-depth conversations, say, well, what's the objective of bringing this person in? Because sometimes it's because they want to meet them and talk to them and have the audience be inspired too. But the audience isn't in the same place. They're not at the same level. They're not looking at the business through the same lens, through the same glasses that the leader is. And so therefore that speaker would probably fall flat. So you have to sort of always make sure that when you are giving advice about which speaker to have, that the person choosing the speaker, making the final decision, is thinking about the audience, what they want them to think, feel and do as a result of having this person come in and speak.
So how, that sounds like quite a difficult conversation maybe to have if you can see, oh, I think actually this person would be much better, but they're really bent on the other one. How do you have that conversation?
Actually, do you know what? It's not that difficult to have. If you just do by asking questions, you can absolutely guide somebody by asking questions rather than sort of trying to tell them what they should be thinking. And as you unravel and go deeper, you tend to find out what's really going on, or what they're really thinking. And they'll have an aha moment and think, ah, OK. The other reason sometimes people come to you with a speaker name that's not right is because it's the only speaker name they know that is a fit for that topic area. So often somebody who's not very experienced or doesn't have a view of all the available speakers will choose a name, and that person is likely to be right out of their price range. They know them because they're quite a high level name. And that's actually quite easy to talk them out of, because they can't afford that person.
Yeah. It's just impossible.
Impossible, yeah. So that's not too difficult. It's the usual, everybody wants Richard Branson.
Yeah, oh my goodness. I bet he is very expensive. Yeah.
I'm putting a zipper on my lips.
Oh, and finally, who are the women that inspire you?
Oh, goodness. So I know you say I'm not allowed to say friends and family, so I won't. I suppose one of the women I've worked with a lot of great women. And the one that strikes me as probably had most effect and I loved working with the most was Anita Roddick, who was the founder of Body Shop. And she sadly passed away I think she was 64, in 2007. But what I loved about her is that she was way ahead of her time in terms of, you know, thinking about the environment, thinking about recycling, thinking about being green and sustainability, thinking about being caring of others, being kind, business as unusual, as she would call it. So she was truly inspirational. She was part Italian, so we hit it off because we had the same hair. So she used to advise me on hair products, which was really great. Wonderful, warm woman, and her husband actually co-founded The Big Issue. But she did so much for charity, for people, for the environment, for business. Amazing, amazing woman. So she's truly inspirational, but totally her, always her. She was herself on stage. She was herself off stage. She was herself when you were having dinner together. She was always herself. And that was wonderful.
That is amazing. I will look her up. And she lives on. She lives on today. Who are you talking about?
In memory, there has not been another Anita Roddick. She was a real aspirational figure in her time. Absolutely. Mm.
Amazing. Maria, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me today. I have really enjoyed it.
It went so fast. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Clear Voice podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to share it with anyone else who would also enjoy it, as well as rating, reviewing and subscribing. You can follow me on Instagram @ClearVoiceOfficial and also email your questions for Clear Voice to hello@clearvoiceofficial.com. And I'll see you next week.